The Adventure in Hathoropolis, written and read by Fresney, Fandom Sherlock BBC, and The Mummy 1991. Warnings for Omegaverse, part of the Variations on an Equation series. Where Major Jeanette de Watrinville survived the sucking mud of Verdun. She just about survived. She was shot in the shoulder, was sent back to the front as soon as they could muster her. The Somme this time. She was shot in the leg, tripped and fell over barbed wire, spiral fracture, 8 places. Probably didn't help sitting it herself so she could crawl through the muck. That required metal plates. She was lucky. 4 months away from the front, but they needed bodies. She happened to have one of those. She ordered alphas who'd barely presented over the top. She'd left those alphas dead on the barbed wire of no man's land. Watched alphas avoid mustard gas, only to die from whatever sitting in the mud from the relentless gray rain got you. Watched the color drain drop by drop from the world. Brave alphas going over the top. Bullets did not care. By the time the war ended, she wanted to be anywhere where it never rained, where the sun would bleach the gray out of her, where she could believe it was over. She washed up in Cairo with a few francs to her name and a feral look. Napoleon had gone to Cairo. She'd always liked Napoleon, historically speaking. The little hyperactive alpha had done well by his soldiers, sleeping 3 or 4 hours a night with his mind churning with ideas. If he could go to Cairo, she could too. She found work where she could. She wasn't picky. She slept in a cemetery for a bit. She ate food spicy enough to burn her tongue alive. The world was still gray. It just didn't rain. She'd turn her face up to the sun and thank the God who died in the trenches for the cloudless sky. That's what she was doing when she ran into Stamford, who'd gone to school with her in Lyon. He said, "De Watrinville, is that you? You're as thin as a lathe and gray as a ghost. I heard you went up to the front. What happened?" He was fat. She eyed the folds around his eyes and felt her stomach curl on itself. "I went to the front." She wanted to put a knife in that soft belly and take his wallet. Instead, she let him be kind. He found her a sort of job translating at the import company where he worked, and he took her to a cheap place to stay where she could pay by the week. Miss Hudson was a kindly English beta. She ran a clean boarding house. "Oh, good. We didn't have any alphas. And don't you find balance is important, Major? My dear departed bonded had no sense of balance. It was all extortion, murder, and intense sex with her. Now then, alphas are on the first floor, betas on the second, omegas on the third." Jeanette let herself be bemused. She'd never lived in a mixed boarding house before. Oh, she'd flirted her share of betas and omegas before the war. She'd been with the sad omegas who clustered for their share of soldiers' pay, from the ones who lived long enough to take leave. She'd paid to forget for an hour or two what she couldn't stop remembering. That's what she was thinking when a tall omega ran into the room and said, "You've been in Verdun, I perceive. More importantly," he looked her up and down, "you'll fit." He dragged her from the room while Ms. Hudson clucked her tongue. "Mr. Holmes!" That wasn't the first time Mr. Holmes grabbed her by the hand, the electric feeling of recognition at that touch, and dragged her somewhere. On that occasion, she was pushed into a replica of a sarcophagus, which for some reason was occupying the floor in the dining room. Mr. Holmes hummed and muttered cryptic remarks about the Bembridge scholars and priestesses of Horus. He took notes. A curve of black mark peeked over the collar of his shirt. It teased at Jeanette, watching the hint of a tattoo move as Mr. Holmes moved and jumped back and forth across the sarcophagus. Jeanette fell asleep. She was tired, and there was something soothing about the sound, something right about Holmes' scent that reminded her of a spicy soup that her mother would always make when she was ill as a child. She was dreaming of skin made of honey and sweet almonds and spice when Miss Hudson shook her awake. She stumbled into her new room with its soft bed. It was too soft. The quiet room was too much. She climbed under the floor and lay there blinking at the night. Mr. Holmes came into her room. There was no way to mistake that delicious scent. There was a light shining in her face. Mr. Holmes said, "Get your shoes." It wasn't as if she was sleeping. She grabbed her army revolver. They were jumping over sleeping dogs in a Cairo alley before Jeanette knew what she was doing. She called after him, pitching her voice for the night. "Who are you?"
"I'm a librarian," was the reply,
which, since they were ducking into a side alley, didn't provide a jot of sense. They were thwarting rival gangs breaking into a medieval church, over a Roman-era temple, over something even older within the hour. They ended up trapped in a maze of corridors, but Holmes led them through it. And Jeanette's gun was more than useful in persuading everyone that the site had historical, but not financial, value. She was standing with Holmes on top of a church at dawn. She watched the edge of the sky turn pale salmon pink, and then a burnt rose, and then deep orange, and into vibrant gold. While Holmes gestured wildly and talked about the significance of a site whose history and stone sank into the land like the roots of a tree, where history was measured in millennia. The wind was in Jeanette's face, and Holmes' scent teased at her like that hint of a tattoo. She could hear her papa's voice telling her that a good alpha was never alone with a good omega. She found herself saying, "Have you a bonded or a fiancé?"
"Your lack of perception amazes me."
Another wild gesture from Holmes as the dawn turned his bronze cast gold.
"I live by myself in a boarding house."
He looked down at her because he was really a very tall and a very thin and a very sort of person.
"Oh, I see. You should know, Major."
And she wanted to protest that she wasn't a major anymore.
"That I consider myself bonded to the study of history, of my history. I'm not interested in anything as boring as bonding or breeding."
He spun away and was down the stairs before she could say anything. He was gone by the time she made it down. But that was only the first time he dragged her off on some adventure. He was a librarian. Jeanette went to his library time to time and saw him scaling up and down tall ladders and organizing books. But as passionate as he was about books, he was also passionate about preserving history. Holmes called her Major, and she didn't say anything. It was only during their third adventure, Jackal Temple near an old quarry, that as Jeanette watched yet another beautiful dawn over the wide, flat horizon of the Yellow Desert, that she realized how much color was in the world. The wind caught in her chest, and she couldn't speak for all the words piling up in her mouth. She looked at Holmes, animatedly speaking, and she ached as if she had a fever. But she didn't say anything, simply let his words wash over her as she breathed in his spicy scent. ¶¶ where Sherlock Holmes knew how to read hieratic writing before English. Although, yes, English, French, German, Arabic, Coptic, Latin, languages. Where he knew he was different long before his presentation as an Omega. One more barrier. Because father may have been English. The sort of writer-adventurer who strode into the desert. But mother was the desert. For as long as he could remember, he'd explored her black, inky markings with a thousand questions. She had as many answers. Every mark had a purpose. The great eye across her belly was for the Omega priestesses of Hathor. The crane was for Thoth and Thought. The woman with the wide, colorful wings was Isis in her protective state. His mother would say, "When you present, we can pick the ones that will suit you." She was long gone before that happened. Father, too. He died not long after mother, hollow-eyed, empty. Sherlock was never going to be like that. Sherlock heard the way the members of the tiny expatriate community talked about them, at mother's funeral, at father's. Even with Sherlock right there in his childish short pants, as if any of them knew how to read hieratic or speak Coptic. Most of them only spoke English, and that poorly. He wasn't one of them. He also wasn't like his cousins running their shop in the Cairo market. He didn't want to be one of them. Being like something else was boring. He was not boring. He made the library his home, because it was full of wonderful information. When Mycroft left to be an alpha civil servant for Queen and Empire in England, he said, "You're coming with me." Sherlock had crossed his arms and raised one eyebrow. Mycroft sighed. "Write me frequently. I worry about you. Constantly." Sherlock sniffed, because Mycroft was boring. He said, "You should take Mother's Thoth statue." Because he wasn't going to say that he would miss stuffy, boring, lazy Mycroft. He was not. Mycroft nodded. "As long as you keep the Hathor." As if Sherlock would have ever parted with that. His lodging was acceptable. He had an acceptable small sinecure at the library. The head of the museum had been a friend of father's. Life was acceptable. It was boring. Also, he'd read all the books in the library. A faded alpha moved into a room downstairs at Ms. Hudson's boarding house. Her scent reminded him of ancient perfume, high notes of cardamom and cinnamon, and middle notes of musky alpha, and low notes of myrrh and southern wood. He wanted to lean down and breathe her in and hold that scent. Her skin was the gray-yellow that marked her as a veteran of the Western Front. Shoulder injury, leg injury, fading strap mark grooves on the side of her head from a gas mask, others for a helmet, slight chest rattle from influenza. She turned light, wry eyes on him and smiled. He shoved her into a sarcophagus for no reason and made remarks about the Bembridge scholars. Touching her was like touching a sacred metal object that had been sitting in the sun. He longed to do it again. The Major fell asleep. He wanted to peel off her faded, worn clothes and see her injuries. He wanted to ask how she'd survived so much and emerged with wry eyes. He left before he could let himself shake her awake. He would not be like his father. He would not be like father. He ached with missing mother for a moment, but he let it go. He had the marks she would have selected for an Omega. It was enough. He heard yet another rumor in the market about Moriarty's jackals facing off against a rival group of thieves, this time in the city itself. His city. He burst into the Major's rooms, and she was on the floor, not sleeping. Good. She was awake. Not good. Her scent was just as enticing as he recalled. He told her to get her shoes, and she ran after him. She was amazed when he knew something as simple as a line of Latin carved into a wall. She was amazed when he knew the layout of a simple Roman sewer. She was amazed when he recognized a temple to Hathor. As if he would not recognize a cow-headed goddess when one sat next to his bedside. She was amazed by him. After they thwarted everyone and were amazing, they stood at the top of the medieval church, and Sherlock felt his heart catch in his chest, because the wind whispered her scent into his mouth, and the major smiled at him and said in that lilt French gave English, "That was fantastic." He wanted to say, "Je parle française." He wanted to say, "I could teach you ancient Egypt. It's a difficult language, but you'd be amazed by me while I was teaching you." He explained in no uncertain terms that he was not bonded, was not interested in bonding, and left. He found another adventure for them by the end of the week. When the outbreak of the war to end all wars was a grave disruption to Mr. Moriarty's archaeological work, a great disruption of disrupting graves, still, he spent the war comfortably ensconced in an office in Cairo making maps and valuable connections. After the war, there were plenty of soldiers eager to take gold to plunder tombs. As to the faded lost city of Hathoras, its streets lined in electrum, Moriarty had found the city first. Fine. He'd found it second. Sherlock Holmes was nothing more than a jumped-up half-breed Meg librarian, and that crippled soldier who followed him around found it first. However, Mr. Moriarty had been intelligent enough to bring mercenaries, because that's what archaeologists did. They brought mercenaries, dug places up, and took crates of ancient treasure back to the real world for both fame and profit. Still, it wouldn't do to muddy the chain of custody. He entombed Holmes and his useless owl in a tomb, and left with his steamship piled high with treasure. He made those alpha professors with their degrees look up and take notice when he steamed home with the greatest find since Carter found Tutankhamun. Course, there'd been the small matter of Hathor's curse, which had every member of his team failing in certain matters of the loins from that day forward. But Professor Moriarty was a beta. He considered his body as just transport. Jefferson Hope didn't see it that way. He said, "You fucking Betty, my cock's good for nothing but pissing since we took that gold. We got to take it back." Moriarty's bodyguard, Colonel Moran, shot him in the head. "I'm the only one who calls the boss Betty." He flashed a gold-toothed smile at the corpse. "He calls me Al." The publicity for the murder attempt ended up boosting sales for his lecture tour in the Americas. They did love their murders. Now, what Mr. Moriarty had no way of knowing was that the tomb that he'd trapped Sherlock Holmes in was that of Amunet, who had been the high priestess of Hathor, cow-headed goddess of love and fertility, in what was the city of Hathor. He wasn't to know, since the tomb contained no gold, that Amunet had vowed bringing something else entirely with her into the afterlife. Then again, he'd been too busy dragging off treasure sacred to a goddess of love with the associated curse. It said something about Jeanette's life that a stone falling into place, trapping them in a tomb, was not all that uncommon a phenomenon. Jeanette lit one of the lanterns that had sat filled with perfumed oil all these years with her lighter. Holmes said, "Major, we have got to get out of here." "Yeah," said Jeanette, holding the lamp up to the sealed door. "No, you state the obvious, Holmes." She grinned at Holmes.
This may be the worst situation you have gotten me into. She didn't say she was sure he'd get them out again. She didn't say that Holmes filled her life with color and adventure, if occasionally getting them trapped in a tomb. Jeanette firmed her lips on what she wasn't saying and looked away. In the enclosed space of the tomb, Holmes' scent was particularly lush, combining with the perfumed oil in a way that made a lump form in Jeanette's throat. But she wasn't going to think about this again. She brushed at the fine layer of dust on the lantern. "No, don't!" Holmes was not bouncing off the walls, examining every surface like he usually did. "We cannot touch anything in this tomb. It's covered in sacred Hathorathic dust." Jeanette felt like an idiot for saying this, but it's a tomb, Holmes. Of course everything is covered in dust. They are always covered in dust. No! Holmes was scrubbing at his throat. They'd only been in the tomb for a minute, and the slab blocking the door was not airtight. Plenty of air. But still, Holmes' scent was... Jeanette breathed in a sudden rush. She felt something flex deep in her groin. A pulse of warmth, but that wasn't possible. "Your heat was only 3 weeks ago." It had been 23 days. 3 days where Holmes went away to meditate. Jeanette counted the days until Holmes would lock himself away again to meditate heat away. But that was something else she wasn't saying. "It is Hathorathic dust!" As if that was supposed to mean anything to Jeanette. Holmes spun around once and then stopped. "I need to meditate." He flung off items of clothing.
"Can you not meditate clothed?"
Jeanette said, wishing she had a sophisticated Parisian background to fall back on, rather than merely being a tailor's daughter from Lyon.
"No, don't be an idiot."
Shirt, trousers, undershirt. Underwear. Scattered on the floor. Jeanette could not look away. Holmes, nude in the light from the lantern, was in love with his body. She bit her lips. Tattoos that had teased her imagination. They were a riot all over his skin. Hundreds of black, wavy lines. And dashes to form the upper and lower lid of an eye, just above his pelvis. Hundreds of tiny images in a square around his belly button. A bead of sweat rolled down in a black strip of dashes that began at his lower right rib and stretched across his gleaming chest. His eyes were closed, and she shouldn't be looking. And kneeled down with the beautiful curve of his buttocks in the air. Shouldn't be looking at the way he leaned his head back and gasped, at the way he was shaking. Jeanette gasped with him. Jeanette was going to look away any minute. She was going to stop breathing in his scent. Any minute. She was going to get them out of this tomb. She said, "Those tattoos." Holmes scrubbed the side of his head.
"Hathor, Isis, and Thoth. Ah! This is not working! Shut up! I need to think! We cannot!"
He groaned again. His scent was stronger now. Inside her, her sapienosis pulsed with blood as it pushed its way out of her body. But she was keeping that in her pants. She was going to stay where she was, except she was already closer. She was already walking through the room, stirring up the dust as she went. She was already reaching when Holmes opened his eyes and said in that deep voice that always went straight to her heart,
"I'm sorry, Major."
He pulled her up onto the slab. She bent her head to his neck
and finally tasted him. She lightly grazed his skin with her teeth, pausing to nip at an elaborate pattern that formed a cat-headed goddess across his shoulder, the mark that had teased her from beneath his clothes. He pulled off her clothes. That was good. It was very good. She was too busy tasting him to do it. Her empty gun belt fell with a clatter to the floor, and she didn't care. She wanted it off. She wanted it all off. She wanted, she needed. She'd needed for so long. He ripped off her shirt. He said, "I'm sorry, Major." She didn't know why he was sorry. She knew that she wanted his hands to keep going. She knew that something was niggling at the back of her mind, but she didn't care. He pulled down her trousers, and her sapienosis was already fully extended, curled free to brush against her thighs, soft, sensitive hairs seeking the delicious scent that she was tasting. "I knew that this was Hathor City. I knew what we might find here. And I've always wanted..." Jeanette kicked the rest of it off, while she tasted that wonderful eye on his belly. He shuddered under her lips. "I'm sorry, Major." His prick brushed softly against her chin. She gave it a quick lick and then a sweet suck. Another lick. He bucked against her. She tasted blood from where she bit her tongue. She didn't care. There was something wrong, but whatever it was very far away. She pushed him so he knelt forward again with that wonderful mind of his, pressed into the sweet dust upon the stone. She licked the source of that wonderful scent. She licked where he was dripping, and danced a finger inside, just a little. He arched his back and groaned, as all the warmth and wonder in the world flooded through her. She needed more. She licked her way up the tattoo of the colorfully winged woman spread across the small of his back. She slid her fingers in sight of him, stretching him, but it would not take much. She lined herself up at his entrance. This was not her first time. She couldn't remember what she'd been trying to forget here in this tomb, with Holmes shuddering before her, the single lamp's light in love with him. Pressing back, "Please, Major, I need, please." She slid smoothly into the slick, warm depths of him. She was not a male alpha. There was no single knot. She couldn't imagine how that would be. The hairs on her sapienosis, each of them a sensitive nerve, sent back sensations of wet warmth, each of them burning with the rightness of his touch. Holmes cried out as she caressed him with a thousand touches at the very core of him. "Major, please!" She caressed the pearl of pleasure within him, because how could she not? When she was feeling everything. She rode the movement of his hips. She licked the tattoo of stars across his back as she rocked in sight of him, as her sapienosis flexed and twisted. His deep voice brokenly whispered, "Major, please." She whispered into those stars, "My name is Jeanette." All those hairs increased their movement, sensation flooding into her through each of them, Holmes slick with what she needed, the Nile overflowing, and she was so parched. He yelled, "Jeanette!" And that was all it took, the hairs stiffening out as she pinned him. He cried out at the pleasure and the pain of it, as she pulsed inside of him, as each of those sensitive hairs pressed into where she most wanted to be. She was crying, although she couldn't have said why. Her heart was too full, perhaps. She said the name she'd bitten back so many times. Sherlock! He rocked against her. She rocked against him. The lantern burned its sweet scent, and she burned where they were touching. And the dust shifted with their movement. This went on for some timeless period. Too short. She loosened inside of him and fell back onto her heels. What she should have remembered returned to her.
Sherlock, I mean Holmes, I'm so sorry. I know you didn't.
While Sherlock was saying, Jeanette, I know that you didn't. He stopped. He turned around and placed his wide hands on either side of her face. He stared at her with those eyes that saw everything. You're in love with me. He kissed her, and helpless fool that she was, she kissed him back. They might have stayed there, kissing, but the tomb was unaccountably drafty. She looked towards the source of the breeze, and the seemingly solid wall had slid open to reveal an opening into darkness. But, she said, Sherlock grinned. His hair was limp with sweat and streaked with dust. He'd never been more beautiful.
The goddess was pleased with our sacrifice. Guilt welled up in her again.
Sherlock, I'm so sorry.
Sherlock laughed.
Don't be an idiot. Any more than you already are. He plucked up his clothing. The only thing sacrificed today was our idiocy.
I am in love with you. He struggled back into his trousers.
Now hurry. We may still be able to catch Moriarty.
They might have. But that was but the first of 13 chambers. Although it could not be said that either minded the sacrifice required to open the door. As it was, they were fortunate. The final chamber contained an ancient well with cool water, even after centuries, and ancient jars full of honey. It wasn't easy crossing the desert by night, but looking back later, all Jeanette could remember was how bright the stars seemed, and the feeling of Sherlock's hand in her own.
As to Mr. Moriarty, well, archaeology was a cutthroat business. It was all about what ancient city he'd plundered lately, the lure of ancient gold and all that. Years later, he went back, and this time, it was to his misfortune that while Holmes and his owl of a dog was busy locating a lost city in ancient Punt, that their brat was more than ready to thwart his plans. What burned was the way that before the authorities hauled him away to begin a stint in an Egyptian prison, Holmes' brat thanked him for bringing her parents together. Mama is always saying they'd have both been too stupid to give in to love if you hadn't locked them into Hathor's tomb. What was worse was when he did the math later on just how old the brat was, though in a way he supposed that made him her godfather. He arranged for a cursed golden statue of a cow-headed goddess to be sent to her from his personal collection. She sent him a thank-you note, and a hieroglyph, the results of reading aloud, was a mixed blessing. Still, as Moran rutted into him in the tight confines of their escape tunnel, he laughed at the turns life took. The end.
Doesn't speak language, holds no currency. He is a foreign.